Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What's the verdict of the assembled sages? Should we rechant this today? There's always such a time factor in these classes. It's such a short span. Should we chant this again? Okay. Putting the crunch on me, huh? Okay. Why don't we just chant the Sanskrit? I won't go through the word for word. All right? That's a compromise. It's okay. Asti Jagyapatir Nama. Keshanchit Aha Santama.
Keshanchit Aha Santama.
Iha Mutra Chalakshante.
Iha Mutra Chalakshante.
Jochna Vatya Kvachit Bhuvaha. Please chant. Mataji's. Okay, we're saving time.
Huh?
Okay, my dear respectable ladies and gentlemen, according to the authoritative statements of Shastra, there must be a supreme authority who is able to award the respective benefits of our present activities. Otherwise, why should there be persons who are unusually beautiful and powerful both in this life and in a life after death? Okay, so I have the assignment. Is this adjustable, this fan? It's kind of blowing everything. I need some blue tack. Anyway, maybe I'll just skip my notes and wing it. Okay, so I have the assignment of doing half of the purport. This is a very loaded purport. Yeah, quite a complex. I don't think it does it, so that's all right. Why don't you just turn it off and I'll sweat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Purushottama, or the best of all living entities. He is a person like all other living entities, but he is the leader or the best of all living beings. That is stated in the Vedas also. Nicho nichanam chetanas chetananam. He is the chief of all eternals, the chief of all living entities, and he is complete and full. He has no need to derive benefit by interfering with the affairs of other living entities. But because he is the maintainer of all, he has the right to bring them to the proper standard so that all living entities may become happy. A father wants all of his children to become happy under his direction. Similarly, God or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the right to see that all living entities are happy. There's no possibility of becoming happy within this material world. I'll read that sentence again. Don't fall asleep on this one. There's no possibility of becoming happy within this material world. Got it? Okay. The Father and the sons are eternal. But if a living entity does not come to the platform of this eternal life of bliss and knowledge, There's no question of happiness. Although Purushottam, the best of all living entities, has no benefit to derive from the common living entities, he does have the right to discriminate between their right and wrong ways. The right way is the path of activities meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we have already discussed, Sanushtitasya Dharmasya Samsidhir Haritoshana. A living entity may engage in any occupational duty, but if he wants to have perfection in his duties, he must satisfy the Supreme Lord. As such, one who pleases him gets better facilities for living, but one who displeases him gets involved in undesirable situations. It is therefore concluded that there are two kinds of duties, mundane duty and duty for the sake of jagya, or sacrifice, jagnartha karma. Any karma activity one performs which is not for the purpose of jagya is a cause of bondage. Jagnartat karmano yatra lokoyam kama bandana. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Bhagavad Gita 3.9. Karma bandana, or the bondage of karma, is administered under the regulations of the stringent laws of material nature. Material existence is a struggle to conquer the impediments put forth by material nature. The asuras are always fighting to overcome these impediments, and by the illusory power of material nature, the foolish living entities work very hard within this material world and take this to be happiness. This is called Maya. In that hard struggle for existence, they deny the existence of the Supreme Authority, Purushottam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In order to regulate the activities of the living entities, God has given us codes. It's a long purport, so it's a bit austere staying awake. So try your best. In order to regulate the activities of the living entities, God has given us codes. Just as a king gives codes of law in a state, and whoever breaks the law is punished. Similarly, the Lord has given the infallible knowledge of the Vedas, which are not contaminated by the four defects of human life, namely the tendency to commit mistakes, to be illusions, to cheat, and to have imperfect senses. If we do not take direction from the Vedas, but act whimsically according to our own choice, we are sure to be punished by the laws of the Lord, who offers different types of bodies in the 8,400,000 species of forms. That's a hint. That's your punishment. You got this body. Material existence, or the sense gratification process, is conducted according to the type of body we are given by prakriti, or material nature. As such, there must be divisions of pious and impious activities, punya and papa. In Bhagavad Gita 7.28, it is clearly stated, Yesham tvanta gatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam durdavrata. One who has completely surpassed the resultant activities of the impious path of life, in parentheses, this is possible only when one engages exclusively in pious activities, can understand his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, one engages in the Lord's transcendental service. This life of engaging always in the loving service of the Lord is called Ahoksaja Diya, or the life of Krishna consciousness, which King Prithu meant his citizens to follow. The different varieties of life and of material existence do not come about by chance and necessity. They are different arrangements made by the Supreme Lord in terms of the pious and impious activities of the living entities. By performing pious activities, one can take birth in a good family and a good nation. One can get a beautiful body, or can become very well educated or very rich. We see, therefore, that in different places and in different planets, there are different standards of life, bodily features, and educational statuses, all awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to pious or impious activities. Varieties of life, therefore, develop not by chance, but by prearrangement. There is a plan, which is already outlined in the Vedic knowledge. One has to take advantage of this knowledge and mold his life in such a way that at the end, especially in the human form of life, he may go back home, back to Godhead, by practicing Krishna consciousness. The theory of chance can best be explained in the Vedic literature, so the Vedic literature has its theory of chance too, so pay attention. The theory of chance can best be explained in the Vedic literature by the words agyata sukriti, which refers to pious activities performed without the actor's knowledge. But these are also planned. For example, Krishna comes like an ordinary human being. He comes as a devotee, like Lord Chaitanya, or he sends his representative, the spiritual master, or pure devotee. This is also the planned activity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They come to canvas and execute. And I'm sorry. They come, that's the devotee, the spiritual master, they come to canvas and educate. And thus, a person in the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord gets a chance to mix with them, talk with them, and take lessons from them. And somehow or other, if a conditioned soul surrenders to such personalities, and by intimate association with them, chances to become Krishna conscious, he is saved from the material conditions of life. Krishna therefore instructs, Sarva dharmam parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papevyo moksha ishami ma suchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. The word sarva papevyo means from all sinful reactions. A person who surrenders unto him by utilizing the chance to associate with the pure devotee, spiritual master, or other authorized incarnations of Godhead like Prithu Maharaj, is saved by Krishna. Then his life becomes successful. Let me read this. Verse and purport again. Asti jagya patir nama keshanjid arha satama. Iha mudra chalakshante jochna vatya kachid buvaha. My dear respectable ladies and gentlemen, according to the authoritative statements of Shastra, one must be a supreme authority who's able to award the respective benefits of our present activities. Otherwise, why should there be persons who are unusually beautiful, and powerful in this life and in the life after death. Om Ganatim Anandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Umitam Gaya Dashmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I'd like to give you an opportunity to envision a book distribution scenario in, say, the late 80s in America. This is something that would frequently happen to myself. I'd be in an airport distributing books, and somehow or other, the conversation that I would be having with the person that I'm trying to sell the book to would evolve into a discussion about evolution. And one point that I would make to this person, I would say to him, you know, that this airport, and I'd point him out, look at it, a very sophisticated building. Did you know that this is the only airport in the world that doesn't have a, that didn't have an architecture, an architect? It's the only one in the world that there was no architectural plan. And they didn't have a head construction engineer. All of these contractors, masons, plumbers, electricians, they all showed up and they just started working. And are you aware of this? You don't know the history, my dear sir? And in one sense, he would feel like, at many occasions, they just kind of had to eat their words about evolution. I say, your body, my dear sir, you're a very intelligent person, your body is much, much more complex than this airport. I mean, there are, you know, some electrical wires and some plumbing pipes that go through the building, but compared to your body with its central nervous system, with its brain and with the blood vessels, it's nothing in comparison in terms of the level of complexity. So, you know, okay, you're a very intelligent person, and I'm not very intelligent, and you're probably for that reason, you're expecting me to accept that your body and my body and all these other bodies came about by chance. And, you know, it usually would stump them. You know, they didn't really have a good retort to that. Now, this is the power of Vedic knowledge. And Maharaj Prithu, he's basically referencing the unlimited variegatedness in life. You know, there's so many different bodies, and this is a kind of a it's a proof that's used in Shastra to make the point that there is a supreme, superior intelligence and a supreme authority. Right? So this is what he's unpacked, you know, in the first part of the purport. He's also, you know, it really is an absurd. Recently, I've been watching this my youngest son is a big fan of Ken Hovind. Anybody ever hear of Ken Hovind? I think he's a descended demigod that preaches He's a Christian creationist evangelist. And he takes on, I saw him take on all of these graduate students at the University of California, Berkeley. I mean, to get into the University of California, Berkeley, you got to have a pretty high IQ. If you're in the science department, you may have a pretty low spiritual IQ. But anyway, materially speaking, it's pretty high up there. It's considered an Ivy League school in America. And so he would take them on in debates, and they would do everything they could to defeat him about evolution. They were supporting evolution. And these are people working on their PhDs, access to the cutting edge understandings that the evolutionists had. And he just made them look like idiots. It's really pretty entertaining. So what to speak of the profundity Vedic knowledge. So this is how Maharaj Prithu begins, and then Prabhupada unfolds, putting it in the context of Maharaj Prithu's presentation about the Vanashram system and how, he is giving from the Vishnu Purana, the understanding of the Vanashram system as it was initially intended to be, how it's supposed to function according to the Supreme Lord, who's the creator. Chatura Vidha Bhajante Man. Oops, that's the wrong verse. Chatura Varnyam Maya Shristam Guna Karma Vibhaga Saha. So, the idea behind all of these varnas and ashrams is to please the Supreme Lord. That's the function of it. And if one does this, sunushtita dharmasya samsidhir haritoshana, one achieves the highest possible perfection of life. If his aim of all of his activities within the varnas and ashrams, his own specific situation, if he does this with the idea of pleasing the Lord, he achieves the highest possible perfection. Some sit here, haritoshana. Okay, so that brings us up to where I started today. And I got 15 minutes to go. Okay, so Prabhupada cites from the Katha Upanishad his famous verse, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadati Kaman, that the Supreme Lord is eternal, all living entities are eternal, the Supreme Lord is cognizant, and all living entities are cognizant. The difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entities is that he's providing all of the necessities of life for the living entities. That's the differentiation between the two, according to this Katha Upanishad verse. So, then Prabhupada makes some interesting points. Krishna derives no benefit by interfering with the life of the lives of the living entities. Contrary to the opinion of the German mothers who prayed to God as their order supplier during World War II that their sons return safe and sound from war. And when they were killed, how can there be a God? God damn God. This is their mood. They became atheists because their prayers weren't answered. So, if I'm deriving some benefit by doing some nasty trick to Rajendra Nandana,
Prabhu,
then there would be some rationale behind my dirty trick, right? If I did some nasty thing to him, then that would be understandable. But Krishna is described as Atmaram. He's totally self-satisfied. There's no benefit that he can derive by interfering with the lives of the living entity. But then Prabhupada goes on to say that still and all, because he's the maintainer of every living entity, he has the right to bring the living entity to the proper standard. So how does he do it? Well, first of all, there's the law of karma, which even though he's the Supreme Person and all of these, the material world and the law of karma ultimately emanate from him, he still, it goes on and he remains neutral. Right? But with this law of karma, if there's an action, let us say that I decide on the basis of some powerful promotional activities of some capitalists in America to start smoking cigarettes. That same kind of strategy. I mean, there's people that are incredibly well-paid psychologists to figure out how to manipulate the mind of Joe Blow. That's an expression in America, the average person. How to manipulate his mind, his subtle body, in such a way that he'll do things that are even extremely injurious to his health. Okay? So after seeing one, they don't allow, and I don't know if they don't even allow these advertisements on television anymore. And in India, it's gone so far that they've got black lungs on the packages of cigarettes. to indicate that if you do this, you're going to really hurt, but still and all. Psh, psh, psh. So people that smoke cigarettes, it doesn't have anything to do with pleasing Krishna. There's some conception that's been formulated within their mind, and because the tobacco industry understands that nicotine is 9 times more addictive than heroin, and they even lace the tobacco with additional chemicals, which make it even more addictive than nicotine alone, and so these poor souls, they get addicted to it, and they just go on, you know, and do they suffer in this life? And what to speak in the next life. So, but the suffering comes. I've told this story before, so forgive me if you've heard it. But I had a friend in high school whose father was addicted to smoking. And naturally, he had some results come his way. He developed cancer of the larynx. So he had his voice box removed, his larynx. You know, which means the vocal cords. So he had to learn how to speak again by belching. You know, because he didn't, you know, he would formulate the same, you know, like vocal cavity, you know, the with his lips and tongue and cheeks, he would form the shape that his mouth would take when he would vibrate with his vocal cords, but he'd have to belch. Because there were no vocal cords there. So it was like quite a hideous sound. Try it. I won't demonstrate it now. I used to practice when I was a young boy, you know, doing this. I don't know why. I hope that, you know, but I became a devotee and I stopped smoking, so I didn't have to worry about it. and then, you know, in total defiance of the laws of material nature, he used to take cigarettes and smoke them through the hole that was cut in his throat. Okay? Okay, now, Guess how he left his body? Okay, he was rushed to the hospital. The cancer, because he kept smoking. You know, he didn't give a flight. You know, that nicotine, you know, he just was hooked. And he bled to death. The cancer ate into an artery in his neck. And he bled to death. He bled to death through that hole, cutting his neck as he was raced to the hospital. Okay, so you can imagine, you know, what kind of, you know, reaction his subtle body would have in his next birth, which more than likely wasn't human. But when he got around to human form again, you know, when someone tried to offer him a cigarette, he probably just, you know, just freak out completely, because he just suffered so much as a result of it. So that's how the law of karma works. And, you know, Pritha Maharaj is bringing his praja, his followers, up to the standard of understanding that it's in their best interest if their activities are within the realm of jagya, which are ultimately designed to please the Lord. Although jagya, you know, in the Karma Kanda platform, there is some fruit of desire that we're trying to achieve, some facility for sense gratification. I think we should take a break, and everyone should stand up and imitate Hiranyakashipu, trying to acquire mystic potent or different potencies. Because there's some people that are nodding out. If you do, I do this when I teach Bhakti Shastra. That stand up, get on your toes, and stretch up as high as you can. Okay, it really works. You know, no one sleeps after that. So anyway, you can do that within your mind, within your subtle body. Take your subtle body and stand it up on its toes and stretch up as high as you possibly can, and it won't sleep. Okay, this is actually very important information for all of us. Now we're no longer, you know. Trying to think of that. Kramani Nirdahati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajan. When one takes a devotional service, this is Lord Brahma and Brahma Samhita, he's no longer under the laws of karma. Okay, let me read the last page of this purport, the last section. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. The word sarvapapevio means from all sinful reactions. How many of you here feel that now you're no longer under the control of sinful reactions? Please raise your hand if you feel that you're in that category. Okay. Okay, we got two candidates for being freed from all, being free from all sinful reactions. I'd like to humbly suggest to the rest of you that didn't raise your hand. This is not, I'm not being paid to say this. This is not a paid promotion for the Mayapur Institute. But I would humbly suggest that those of you that did not raise your hand, I'm sorry, it just sounds sarcastic, you should immediately go to, what's the building of the, where the Brahmachari kitchen is? What's that called? Chaitanya Bhavan. That, not immediately, but by, let's say, 10:15. Go to the Chaitanya Bhavan, on the same floor that the Mayapur Academy is located. And rather than turning left to go to the Mayapur Academy, go straight and go to the Mayapur Institute office and register for the Bhakti Shastri course. Okay, because you, every one of you actually has the capacity, starting today, if you understand the parameters of Uttama Bhakti, that you actually, even in what you may consider your neophyte condition, has the capacity to practice Uttama Bhakti, and that, according to Srila Prabhupada in the 1944 BTG article, that that's the level of surrender that's required. If one practices Uttama Bhakti, he throws the switch on this fan, just as we threw this. By the way, could you throw the switch on this fan again and turn it on and begin to sweat to death? Rabbi Lochan Prabhu, could you turn it on again? That when we begin the practice of Uttama Bhakti, we throw the switch off. Okay, we're no longer under the laws of karma. Can you turn it off now? This is a graphic demonstration of how... okay, so now, you notice that it's still spinning. Okay? So, how many of you have suffered in the last 48 hours? Please raise your hand. Rabbi Lochan, you haven't suffered? Okay. Okay, so, pretty much it's unanimous vote. You've all suffered. So that fan is still spinning. That's what's going, this is how Prabhupada described it. He says, it seems like a gradual process. If you're actually practicing Uttama Bhakti, and Uttama Bhakti is defined as pure devotional service. But Prabhu, I'm not a pure devotee. I got my karma. I got to go to my astrologer. Well, first of all, in order to practice Uttama Bhakti, please forgive me if you feel like I'm chastising you, but you have to understand what Uttama Bhakti is. There's a very clear and precise definition that Srila Rupa Goswami has given in the Purva Vibhag, the Eastern Division of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the first Lahari, which is Samanya Bhakti. And he defines Uttama Bhakti as Anyabhilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Dinavita Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. So when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruit of action. And one must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. I mean, it is so intricate, this definition. So you can precisely understand, it's not just a loose term, what it means to be a pure devotee. And Jagyamurti, you know, you can be a pure devotee as soon as you understand it and start applying it. It's accessible for all of us. Ramaniya Mataji, you as well. Guru Seva Mataji, it just requires understanding and then vigorously trying to function within the parameters and having no other motive than to try to be Krishna's devotee and please Him. There may be fleeting desires, longings that still are within the heart from our conditioning, but we have to insulate ourselves from them and function within the realm of Uttama Bhakti, and that fan is unplugged. Bas. Finished. No more karma. So then why is it that even advanced devotees will sometimes consult with astrologers, and the astrological consultation seems to fit their situation? Well, okay. Does anybody want to hear the answer? Please raise your hand if you do. If you don't, you're welcome to leave now, because my time is up. Okay? But it's actually a very significant answer, and it's very applicable to you, because you've all admitted that you suffer. And it's not like you'd suffered once. It's pretty much a continual flow. Like, this fan stopped because I entered the platform of praying. Okay? I finally got there. Or another way of looking at it is that, you know, I've understood that as long as I, for instance, when Srila Prabhupada was in his last days, the doctors that attended him could not understand why he was not screaming and begging for morphine, because his bodily condition was such that any other person would be writhing and screaming in pain. Prabhupada's answer to this, you know, why he didn't require morphine, well, there's several answers, but what he, you know, philosophically there's several answers, but what he said, there's a verse that Prabhupada cites right after the title page in Krishna book, and it's from the tenth canto, first chapter, is the fourth text. Nivatat tarsher upagiyamanat bavoshadak chotramano biramat ka utama shloka gunanuvadat puman virajeta vinam pashubnat. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple in the parampara system. Persons who are no longer interested in the glorification of this false temporary manifestation hear and chant about the Lord. And this is the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will fail to hear this glorification except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So Prabhupada was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that it was like, for instance, one of the symptoms let's see, the sixth characteristic of pure devotional service and the pleasure, Sri Krishna Karshani. I'm trying to think. Radhika Gopika, or Gopika Radhika. I'm an old man and my memory has failed me. You're a young lady and you're very scholarly. What are the two characteristics of pure devotional service that manifest on the platform of prema? I just taught this six times, you know, in the last 4 months, but somehow or other it's evading me. Sandrananda Visheshatma. Okay, got it. She looked at me like, oh, that poor old man. And immediately it popped into my brain. You know, her compassionate Vaishnavi character empowered me to remember. So Sandrananda Visheshatmi, Sandrananda Visheshatma is a characteristic of pure devotional service that manifests at the platform of prema. And at that stage, one isn't even aware of the presence of sense gratification because the transcendental ecstasy is so overwhelming. It's not even aware. Like, on the platform of bhava, the characteristic of moksha laguta krit manifest. And the pleasure on the platform of bhava is so great that it derides even the conception of liberation, which is considered to be the greatest material pleasure because you don't suffer anymore, right? Okay, so but on the platform of prema, you can't even conceive of the existence of sense gratification, because the ecstasy is so phenomenal, it doesn't even exist for you. What to speak of suffering, not even there. You don't even feel it. He is so absorbed. It's the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Okay, so I don't know how much longer I should go on here. There's a few more things to say. So how is it? This is how I enticed you to stay beyond the bewitching hour, you know, of 8:45. You know, is how you could understand, you know, that, you know, even advanced devotees, they'll consult astrologers, and it seems to be applicable, even though Karmani Nirdahati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajan. A devotee is no longer under the laws of karma if, you know, he's engaged in Uttama Bhakti. Okay, so the explanation is that this is given in the purporting of 10.14.8, this famous verse, Tate Nukampam Shukshamikshamano Bunjani Vatma Kritam Vipakam. This is the Mahavakyam for dealing with suffering for devotees. You know, how to have an attitude that enables us, when we undergo suffering, to elevate ourselves by our minds rather than become degraded and become atheists. Interestingly enough, and I just got this confirmed by Vyasaki, I just saw him in the Delhi temple when I was teaching. He was just arriving in India. And during Srila Prabhupada's centennial, which was, what was the year of this? 1996, right? Yeah. The centennial was observed. The recognition of the celebration of the centennial was coordinated by an international centennial committee, of which Lokanath Swami was the chairperson, and Prashanta was the administrator. And they had different petals of a lotus by which this centennial was observed. And one petal, and this was considered to be a quite a significant petal, was it reuniting, excuse me, was the reuniting of Srila Prabhupada's family, as Ramaniya and Rajendra Nandana, I don't know if we got any other Prabhupada disciples here today, they can attest that there was a fairly massive exodus of devotees from the movement after Srila Prabhupada left. I mean, it was pretty substantial. I mean, it was even more substantial in many parts of the world since 1986 and 87. And in North America, it was about 75% of temple devotees that just left. So, one way that this petal was celebrated was by publishing Unity Magazine. There were actually two versions of it. Editions of Unity Magazine published. In the first edition, in the first article, there was an interview of Vyasaki, who had traveled all over the world and visited over 500 devotees that had stopped practicing Krishna consciousness, stopped associating with ISKCON. And he was amazed because he found two common denominators. Now, I realize that this is not an expression that's commonly used in India. So, a common denominator, like in arithmetic, a quarter is 1/4. So the denominator is 4, right? So a common denominator, let's say we've got 1/4 plus 3/4 equals 1. So the common denominator of 1/4 and 3/4 is 4, okay? So there was a common denominator, two common denominators, in every single one of these devotees that had left ISKCON. One These are all Prabhupada disciples. They all had, they still had deep love and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And two, is that somehow or other, they were unable to apply the philosophy that's elaborated in this verse. Tate nu kampam shukshmikshmano bunjana ivatma kitam vipakam rag vapadipiribhidam namaste. I can't even remember. Jiveta yo muktipade sadaya bhak. So this verse, Srila Prabhupada says on page 91 of the Nectar of Devotion, should be the guide for all devotees, because it allows us to have a proper understanding philosophically of what's going on when we suffer. In the last 2 days, I spoke with devotees that have developed terminal illness. One devotee that developed this says that when devotees get this particular disease, there's a very, very high suicide rate, because it affects the subtle body and kind of supports depression with the speaker, you know, because they don't know. I mean, that's their whole life, you know, their bodies, you know, for a materialist. So how does a devotee elevate himself when he gets into a situation which seems to be not so auspicious, where there's some suffering going on? So the understanding that the acharyas give us in their commentaries on 10.14.8 is that, technically speaking, these are not karmic reactions. Now, Prabhupada in this purport quotes this verse, Sarvadharma, everybody knows this, right? Who doesn't know? No, I don't have to say. I shouldn't say that. But practically everyone. It's one of the first verses you learn when you become a devotee. Sarva dharman parikjagja mamikam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papivyo mokshe ishyami ma suchaha. So I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. So what happens to the sinful reaction? And how is it that our astrological charts still seem to be, to some extent, valid? Because what happens is that Krishna takes charge of these sinful reactions. He puts them in his department and takes them out of your department. They're no longer yours. He takes charge of them and he utilizes them to help you come to him. Any senior devotees, I mean, Ramaniya Mataji, have you ever been through a lot in your life? Vijendra Nandana, I mean, it's heavy sometimes being a devotee, right? But if you look back at all those years, I mean, you made it. I mean, you've been around a long time. You look back at all of those years, and the pinprick that Krishna gives us, you know, the little suffering that we get. And as the acharyas say in the commentaries on 10.14.8, they're there to remove the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit that the devotee has, so that he'll give up this false attempt to enjoy in the material world and take deep shelter in him. That's it. Bas. That's what the fan's spinning for. It's already switched off. It's Krishna that's doing this. And he's doing it out of love for each of us. Because, listen to this. My son left at the wrong time. He didn't hear it when I read it in the first place. And now he's not going to hear it this time. There is no possibility of becoming happy within this material world. The father and sons are eternal. But if a living entity does not come to the platform of his eternal life of bliss and knowledge, there is no question of happiness. So, you know, this purporting to some extent, is kind of directed toward those who haven't come to the Uttama Bhakti platform, but are still a little bit situated on the Karma Yoga platform. Because here's a description. A living entity may engage in any occupational duty, but if he wants to have perfection in his duties, he must satisfy the Supreme Lord. Here's the sentence that I'm referring to. As such, one who pleases him gets better facilities for living, but one who displeases him gets involved in undesirable situations. So, Rajendranandan Prabhu, you've been serving for so many years, but then you get these undesirable situations. How do we explain it? What the heck is going on? Well, you got Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti, she prays Vipada Shantuta Shrashvat Tucha Tucha Tugad Guru Bhavato Darshanam Yatcha Apana Bhavadarshanam. May all those calamities happen again and again. Because when they come, then you come, we get your darshan, and when we see you, Krishna, then we no longer see repeated birth and death. You know, if we want to become freed from our anarthas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes in Bhajan Rahasya 2:43, that you can't get rid of your anarthas on your own. But if you cry to the holy name for several days, then Krishna will free you from all anarthas. And Guru Seva, you take care of your granddaughter. Does your granddaughter ever cry? Is it very intense? It's like super intense, right? But that's how we're supposed to chant our rounds. If we're not chanting like that, then it's very, very difficult to be attentive. Pramada means inattention. It also means madness. It also sometimes is referred to as, there's one word-for-word translation, I think it's in the seventh canto, woman, the one who steals the mind of a man away. Okay? But I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. Pramada, right? Pramada. So this is the root cause of all offenses. So when we're suffering, it's much easier to take shelter of Krishna. You know, when we're getting that little pinprick from that spinning fan that Krishna so lovingly sends our way, and we can actually relish it. You know, if we understand the philosophy of kleshagni, you know, how suffering takes place and the fruit, you know, how it comes, you know, and how a devotee is freed from it, we're no longer under it. We can play transcendental jujitsu with any suffering that comes our way. I'll give you an example. This was like years and years ago. It must have been probably 1984. Okay, the clock is ticking and my time is slipping through my fingers. Ayur Harati Bai Pum Sam. Udyan Astan Chayana So. Time takes away the life of every living entity except one who hears and chants about the glories of the Lord. And he just becomes closer and closer to that eternal position of bliss and knowledge. Don't worry about the time. Okay, so then fast, you know. Anyway, prasadam will be there. Somehow or other, you won't die. Krishna won't allow this. Okay? Where was I? I lost my train of thought. Huh? What was I last saying? Before Rajendranandan looked at the clock and threw my brain out of whack. Okay, blame it on him. Okay. What was I saying just before that? Huh? Okay, so transcendental jujitsu. Okay, I'll give you a classic example in my own life. This is 1984. 1983. And 2 years before, I'd gone through my big big first big test as a devotee, like maha test, heavy, ooh, super intense. And there was a sannyasi that recommended that I learn tat te nukam pam sukshmik shamano. Okay, so I did. So then here I am, 1983, I'm in Vrindavan. This was pre-Bisleri water days, okay? Okay, this was when you would come to Mayapur and devotees would tell you, go to Prabhupada's tap. This is the good water, okay? And there was a good tap in the Gurukul. And every time I would come to India, I would get so damn sick. Oh my God. But this time, okay, so then I was in Vrindavan, okay? And I got dysentery, okay? And I had a friend who I would always go to for practical advice when I was in Vrindavan, Hansarupa. And he was he was in charge of the samadhi construction. And he had been my assistant bhakta leader, you know, when I became a devotee. And, you know, he just handled it naturally, you know. It would be very instructive for you. Little did he know how prophetic his words were. So this condition got worse and worse and worse. And I ended up, it went on for about 3 weeks. I lost something like 20 kgs. I came back to America and I looked, you know, people thought, my God, what a sadhu. You know, you could count every rib, you know. and I met this devotee, Keshava, who was the first big book distributor. He was the brother of Karandar. Okay, and he was the first person to discover how to get big books out in big numbers. This is Krishna book, way back, 74, something like that. Anyway, he'd been out of the movement for a while. He came back in and he said, Jamastami, we used to call this the knot. Okay? Because what would take place is that I would get these cyclical cramps that probably closely resembled a level of pain that a woman experienced at the time of giving birth to a child. Okay? I mean, it was so heavy. And for, you know, like 40 to 50% of my waking hours for those 3 weeks were spent on the toilet. You know, passing blood and mucus. I'm sorry, I know this is mixed company, but the graphic details make it all that much more, it makes it more, like, understandable. Let's put it that way. So when I was in the midst of the knot, okay, as Keshava said, all the old devotees called it the knot, I would recite this verse in my mind. I was in so much pain that I couldn't chant. I couldn't open my mouth. I was just grimacing in pain. So I would recite this verse in my mind. I mean, completely disgusting situation materially. But I recited this verse in my mind, and lo and behold, I experienced unbelievable levels of transcendental bliss. It was like an introduction. You know, Hansarupa, one of my Vartma Pradakshika gurus, you know, suggested just hand it naturally. You know, take hyssop bale, dahi, and green bananas. And so anyway, it was like I was introduced to a lifelong friend. You know, so you can turn the most difficult circumstance, whether your gross or subtle body is being purified by Krishna's spinning fan, you can transform it into an ecstatic experience just by applying the flight. Quite a detailed understanding. I didn't get all of it, but just a sneak preview, just to get you to sign up for the Bhakti Shastri course. Enrollment's a little low this year. You know, the promotions failed to some extent. So, you know, this is a last-ditch effort to get you in there. So when the suffering comes your way, you know, when Rahu's hanging over your head, you know, and all hell is breaking through loose in your life, you got a way to transform that pain into ecstasy. Okay? Hare Krishna. I think maybe we should end here. I don't know, probably some of you got some questions. But if you go to the Bhakti Shastri course, you'll get all of the answers. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.